just as in the military world, the citizen-military gap is closed. Citizens are just as much involved now in military operations as the soldiers, and are just as often killed as the soldiers. So with politics, the gap between the kid and the politician is over. And the gap between the ballot box and the box office is likewise closed. The ballot box is now used to create images that are show business. It used to be used to create representatives of the public. Now you no longer try to make something that represents anything. You try to create a new, original, and striking image that will wow audiences. A politician has to be show business. He's no longer a representative of anything. He makes his own space and his own image.
Now it's changed the seasons for these people. It's changed their being inside. It's changed their social relationships. And it's
changed their space. Because naturally, when you're out of doors in the summer, your idea of space is very different from indoors in the wintertime. Crime steps up in the summer. Why? Space is different. And space is more challenging, more of a frontier. It offers less sense of identity in the summertime than it does in the wintertime. Your sense of identity is upset and challenged by outer space and frontiers of new frontiers, so you become more violent. It has nothing to do with heat. It has to do with the upset of space conditions. The kids in the blocks, of course, the residents in the blocks have no neighborhood because the occupants of the area change so rapidly that nobody knows anybody, and consequently everybody is a stranger. And when strangers live beside strangers, they become very violent. So it's just like the old West Frontier. The only way to prove who you are or find out who you are is to sock somebody, shoot somebody. Otherwise, you're nobody. So in a fast-moving, fast-changing neighborhood, violence is normal. It's the only form of identity known to people in such areas. A wonderful figure popped up. My son Eric was telling me that he was listening to a program the other day in which it was mentioned that in London, England, a city of comparable size to New York, total violent deaths for 1967 were 38. In the same period in New York, over 600. This means simply that the English people don't move as fast, they don't shift their neighborhood as fast, they know each other better, they have a better sense of identity, and consequently don't feel the need to smash anybody, to kill anybody. The moment you have no identity, the moment your identity is called in question, you fight. Seaports are big metropolitan areas. Rail centers are big metropolitan areas. Motor cars tear cities to pieces, throwing them, hurling them out into suburban fragments at a distance. The jet plane comes along, leaves the whole thing to rot as a ghetto. And what about your thoughts on the subject of airplanes that now travel faster than sound? At the speed of a bullet. The planes actually exist. And the effect on cities is drastic. It means no more cities. The globe becomes a village in a physical sense. It's city blocks are literally remote, archaeological, ancient entities that need to be studied. People living in cities today need to develop the habits of archaeologists. You have already become a notable archaeologist, Tony, by recording the sounds of this city. You're probably the only person who will enable the posterity to know what the hell it sounded like. They will be farming in this area where we're sitting in the next few years. Just as London Bridge is not falling down, but is carefully being dismantled, every stone in New York will be taken down and the ground returned to agriculture within a few decades. There's no need for cities anymore. Under these conditions of travel and of communication, the very existence of a congested metropolitan area is meaningless. It's like the commuter who races downtown at great expense and loss of life in order to use the telephone. Electricity decentralizes all the old hardware made cities by centralizing. All the new software, information, electric circuits decentralize. There isn't, as you know, in your work, there isn't anything that you cannot have anywhere. You could do this work that you're doing now. You could do it just as well in Tokyo or at the North Pole. The medium and the message is entirely a visual concept. It is, there is no such dichotomy possible for the auditory man. In the auditory space, there is no content there, because everything in that, in such space, creates the space that it is. Right. And
it creates a unique space in which it alone exists.
And that is archetypal.
And this space is contributed to by the other things which are happening at the same time. So
yeah.
If it happens again later, it's different.
In that respect, that wonderful metaphor of choice comes up, one world burrowing upon another. Every world, in an auditory sense, by resonance, burrows into and tunnels.
And is burrowed into.
Is burrowed into and tunnels into other worlds.
Right.
So that there is an enormous inter-resonance and interface of worlds constantly metamorphosing and creating new things and new ferment. The future of the future is the present. Where the children of Watts can say, why should we go to school and interrupt our education? The reason for that is that there's more information available outside than inside the school. Okay. By the way, there's a curious example of the Emperor's New Clothes in FDR. FDR, when he stood on his feet, was a leader. When he sat in a wheelchair as a cripple, he was an emperor. When he sat down, he was able to put on the whole audience and to create totally new environments. When he stood up, he merely was a specialist, fragmented leader. An emperor is a man who creates totally new worlds, new environments. The electric world is ending 2,500 years of hardware, not 500. It's the whole Greco-Roman tradition that it's ending. But here is another way to approach it. There's a saying, help beautify junkyards. Throw something lovely away today. The idea that the whole world is a kind of junkyard, needing tidying up by artists and civilized people, is one that amuses natives in countries like the Balinese, where they say, we have no art, we do everything as well as possible. They don't think of art as something you put in an environment, but of the environment as something you manipulate as a work of art. And art is to them magical. Now, this is where Madison Avenue has returned to the most primitive conditions of the caveman. When the radio was new, the Negro grabbed the new form and related speech to it again, dance and song, and created a form, archetypal form, that was accepted instantly in Tokyo, Berlin, every part of the world, integrated the world. Now we're talking about integrating the Negro. First, he integrated the whole damn world, and then we now try to integrate him. This is the craziest thing at all. Now, the Cockneys, the London or Liverpool Cockneys, are integrating the world by Oriental strummies. Oh, we can go back to that. And the East-West integration this time, the Oriental, instead of the Negro integrated the Western world. Well, the Cockneys are now integrating the East-West complex. But they're doing it by ear, strumming. And this response of a literary man to a thing like radio is futile. He merely says it's a degradation of all decent culture and literature, and it's the end. You make your image. You don't have an image. There isn't a you that you don't make. Any you that there is something you make. You contrive.
Yes, but you...
You're not given an image that is you.
You are in a mechanized society.
Well, we're not in a mechanized society and haven't been for 50 years. And in for fully 50 years, we've been outside a mechanized society. Humpty Dumpty went back together again at least 50 years ago. But that doesn't mean that the bureaucrats notice. For example, did you see that bit the other day about the influx of CIA material so fast that they can't read their own mail and don't know their own secret messages anymore?
That's right. They can't handle it.
That's how they lost the Pueblo. They hadn't been able to read the mail. But what happens? This is high speed. What happens at high speed? Pattern recognition. You no longer get the message of classified data as you do at low reading speeds. You suddenly see the dance of thought. At high reading speeds, you follow the dance of thought. an author's mind begins to dance in front of you, and repetitively, because the greatest mind in the world has only one page of thoughts to offer to mankind. And he dances that thought over and over and over and over. Poor old Karl Marx had not a clue as what was going on in his own time, let alone the future. He was pure rearview mirror. That is, like any utopian, he looked only at the past. He thought that tribal communism was the only ideal one. Now we got it. But he thought it was a return to tribal conditions. He never thought you could get it by electricity, which had already happened in his own time. He thought you could smash up the hardware world of the bourgeoisie and get return to tribal communism, romantic style. That was his dream. Now, in 1820, the service environments of hardware in England, available to the ordinary guy for a few shillings, postal systems, travel, knowledge, education, press, were far in excess of the greatest wealth. Not the richest man in the world could buy the services available to a poor man in 1820 in England. That was communism. It happened long before Marx. Hardware communism. Hardware communism happened before Marx was born. Now, he saw it as a future dream like Orwell. 1984 happened before Orwell was born. Now, software communism, which we've got, is tribal. And it's multi-billion dollar communism for free. It doesn't cost anything. The small child has it for free. The Nigerian has it for free. All the programs are free. It's a world environment, a teaching machine for free of affluent images. Now, when the native or infant wallows in this multi-billion dollar tribal communism, he says, where are the cornflakes? I've got the multi-billion dollar check in my pocket. I've got all the experience that mankind ever had, but where are the cornflakes? Where's the hardware? So they scramble around trying to have a 19th century in Nigeria or Russia. But they've already passed into the, But you see, the dilemma is that the poorest people in the world now live in a multi-billion dollar service environment. And they don't have the ordinary cheap hardware of the old 19th century. The United States is destroying itself by trying to hold back a rising tide of communism that happened 100 years ago.
Fighting the windmills.
Yeah. And they don't have enough strength. There are too many windmills.
Oh, windmills are always the money. You go and you knock one over, the next one is right behind it.
You don't knock one over, they knock you over. As Don Quixote said, what a blow that phantom gave me. Wow. But, the U.S. is finished simply because it is unable to perceive the obvious. Environmental change, the emperor's new clothes, fool it just as much as they ever fooled anybody. Because it takes more powers of perception and more intensity of awareness than they've got, that's all. They're absolutely soaked up in their old hardware service environments, a la motor car, airplane stuff. Oh, the U.S. has a huge stake in the old hardware, 19th century.
This is what the speed-up causes, does it?
The old backward countries have no stake in the old 19th century hardware. They can move straight into the new communism, into the new software. Nigeria gets radio before it gets cornflakes.
Cultures are leapfrogging experiences.
Burrowing through each other. On the contrary, you see, what it means is, with information overload, they may suddenly get the pattern at last. The answer is that information overload equals pattern recognition. The students simply laugh at those enclosed spaces called colleges. They know that they can pick up information in our kind of all-at-once, multi-directional world. They can pick up information all the time from everywhere. And the idea that you've got to go inside a coop and open your books at such and such a page in order to know something is just sheer nonsense. That the more civilization, the more violence. He doesn't know why. He just notes it as a paradox. The reason is simple. The more civilization, the more specialism. The more fragmentation of human activities, the more specialist people become, The more specialist you become, the more precarious your personal image becomes. The more precarious your identity, the more violent you become. When people's identity is threatened, they become violent. This is why we shout at foreigners.
Shout at what?
Foreigners. Because when you're talking to a person who doesn't understand a word you're saying, this threatens your identity. So you shout at him. You're going to assert yourself, damn it, even if he doesn't understand you. But apparently the main problem for the young today is to get rid of their private identity. This is the thing that plagues them. It's the huge sort of hangover from a literate age that bugs them. The Chinese are trying foolishly to enter the 19th century. The Japanese leapt into the 20th century. The hell with the 19th century. And the Japanese exercise a little imagination. The Chinese are foolishly trying to mimic an old 19th century culture, the same as the Russians. The Russians are still trying to have a 19th century out of some inferiority feeling and some shame of tribalism, which is theirs. They're trying to still capture the visual space and organization of 19th century man. The Japs gave it up. They just bypassed it and shot into the 20th century. They have never tried to be 19th century in Japan. And it's obvious that we have to do the same thing in order to survive. To go on perpetuating the 19th century in the name of civilization, while at the same time perpetuating and making pervasive an electric technology which undermines our 19th century bases, this creates schizophrenia, the most hideous type inside our own homes. We're asking our kids to follow goals while we've taken all goals away by providing an electric environment which has no goals. It's like asking Negroes to go 19th century while they have already triumphantly organized the 20th century with jazz. This kind of misunderstanding I don't suppose ever could have occurred on such a scale before in human history. But it's the literati, it's the noblest and most unselfish liberal minds that are perpetuating this nonsense. It's people that do gooders who are doing this hideous distorting of the lives of our time. It's only those who have lost their sense of identity that become tycoons. Deprived. The disadvantaged, the frontiersmen. They're utterly deprived of any identity.
How do you lose your identity?
By switching your environment. If you're suddenly switched into a new environment, you're lost. You have no identity. Nobody knows who you are. The greatest surgeon in the world in a pub in Australia would be a bum. He'd have no identity at all. So how would he acquire an identity? He'd have to bust somebody on the beezer to show he was a man. There's no other way. When you've lost your identity, there's only one course, violence.
Well, how about McCarthy?
He's trying to invent a new political image, yes. And he is bashing, using all possible media, he's bashing millions of people in the face and over the head day and night.
But with a 19th century identity, I think. Mark.
Yeah, Yokel, yeah. Tom Sawyer, that's Huck right. Finn, something like that. But sure, these characters are ruthless in their image making. The public image they try to create has nothing to do with themselves.
Does that make them unqualified to be president?
No. Nobody knows what a president is anymore. The press loved Coolidge because he was such an icon. A mask.
Yeah, right.
Deadpan. He was perfect. Cartoon material, both verbally and pictorially. And keeping cool with Cal and so on.
He was the first man with a cool image. He was the original McCullough.
No, I don't advocate coolness at all. I just observe that it is omnipresent and pervasive, and I happen to know why. But I don't wish that it would be this way. I have no values as regards anything I talk about. I do think we live in a very too interesting world, and to anybody who complains about lack of interest is just not noticing nothing. But I don't like to live in an interesting world. I'd rather things stay put, and so I could have a little boredom and be a human being. In politics, You've got to have people who wish to appear heroic in their willingness to assume superhuman tasks. At the same time, if they want to survive politically, they have to appear reluctant. If they are too eager for that job, they're finished. So Kennedy managed to, I think, appear like the reluctant. He was heroic, but reluctantly, as if he'd rather be doing something else. Now, the great master of this is Trudeau. Trudeau is probably the greatest TV image of this century. As you will discover slowly, the American press is not prepared to take Canada seriously enough to give him any coverage. The politics of representation based on the old hardware cannot stand up to radio and television. Roosevelt was FDR was the first radio president. He created an image that no other president had ever done with his fireside talks. The White House became the firing line. He conducted the World War from the White House. The Second War.
It was the First World War.
A railway. It was a railway war fought with incredible millions of men and hardware. Second War was the first radio war. This is the first TV war, and it brings the war into our living rooms, and the pattern is that the civilian is part of the military establishment. He sees his own children killed on TV news. And he sees other people's children being killed on TV news, and he feels that they're his children. He can't bear to see this happen in his living room. The involvement is too much. We're now, as one of my students put it, this is the Third World War, the first ever fought on American soil. This Vietnam War is the first world war fought on American soil in the American living room. Now, these are patterns of involvement as opposed to the old hardware patterns of specialism and detachment. Civilization is specialism and detachment. Objectivity, justice, privacy, individualism. The new software creates tribalism, involvement, total lack of objectivity, and no desire for privacy or individuality. The TV generation are trying to get rid of all private personality. They don't want one for themselves. They resist and resent any attempt to give them one by literacy. On the other hand, the Japanese, who have a profound tribal collective society, are desperately trying to acquire our hardware so that they can acquire our kind of power. Oh, yeah, this is something we didn't bring up. Whenever a new technology comes in, it's the old one that is seen as the enemy. The new one is invisible. So you go out and destroy the old one. Today, the kids don't see that their enemy that is destroying them is the new electronic technology. They think it's the damned old hardware, the school system. Don Quixote, when he got a real dose of Gutenberg romances, rushed out, got on his armor, and dashed off into the Middle Ages to destroy windmills. When radio was new, the Negro created jazz, the American Negro only. The American Negro was the only person who could create jazz because he was sufficiently in contact with a visual culture to feel the challenge of the interface of radio. The African native had no such interface with the print culture, and he didn't feel the challenge. But the American Negro created jazz, which means to yatter. Jazzé is New Orleans French for to yatter. He created a speech-oriented, not a visually, or a speech-oriented sound. The sort of beat of the old hymns that Louis Armstrong talks about as having inspired his idea of the trumpet. The American Negro created an art form that revealed the nature of radio and was accepted instantly in Tokyo, Paris, Berlin, London, New York, and still is.